Well, Justine, I think we need to deal with your news first and foremost. Now, I'm not really sad about you going overseas, living the dream without children for 6 months, because I know that we'll hear from you with some really fabulous stories from time to time during your visit over there. I'd love to be doing it myself, but let's just play our conversation from the other day about your plans. Why the decision to uproot yourself and go to France? Because you can?
Basically because we can. And it's because my partner and I, we're both able to work remotely, and mainly because our children have now left school and are fully independent, don't mind if we're not around for an extended period of time. So it's really
I can hear them cheering in the background, I think.
So it's really a question of why not?
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. And these opportunities don't always come around. I guess your ability to work remotely, we understand because we're in the same boat. How soon do you think you might go?
We plan to leave at the end of May.
Where do you think you might base yourself?
Well, we're going to start off in Marseille, which is a city I've never been to, but I kind of wanted to avoid Paris given the Olympics are coming up, because I figure it's going to be quite expensive and a lot of people will be there. I've always wanted to explore the south of France. And from what I know of Marseille, it feels like it's one of those very multicultural, quite gritty cities, but it has a lot of beauty, a lot of history, and it's also very close to lots of other great places. For example, you can get to Barcelona on the train in just 4 hours from Marseille.
Yeah, yeah. I have visited Marseille. You're right about gritty. When we hired a car there, the person who rented us this car was through Hertz or someone. They said, "Now, you're not in Paris anymore." And I'm thinking, that's a great welcome to Marseille. But it's an interesting place. The old port's fantastic. And the food. I guess you've got a lot of paperwork to do.
Well, it definitely is a completely different challenge when you're planning a trip that's longer than 90 days or 6 weeks or so on in Europe, because if you're going just for a short period of time, a couple of weeks or maybe even a couple of months, you really don't have to worry too much about visas if you're an Australian resident, because you automatically get the Schengen visa, which means that you can travel throughout the Schengen countries. And for anyone who doesn't know what those are, that's most of the countries in Western Europe, a good chunk of Eastern Europe, Scandinavia, which allow you to travel freely across the borders, but only for 90 days out of 180 days.
Yeah.
Notable exceptions are the UK and Ireland. And then as you go further east, say Turkey is not part of Schengen, North Africa is not part of Schengen. But all the major countries that most people want to go to, France, Italy, Spain, Germany, etc., are part of the Schengen visa, which means you can just easily travel. However, if you want to stay longer than 90 days, you actually have to get a visa.
Right.
And that can be quite a tricky thing. If you want to get a visa, you have to look at individual country visas, and every single country within that area has a different set of visas that you can apply for, a different set of paperwork and different conditions. And the other problem is that you can usually only apply for those visas between 3 months and 3 weeks before you depart, which makes it quite difficult to set your plans firmly in place.
Sure.
So that's just kind of a heads up for people who are thinking of doing that. And of course, there's a whole range of visas. You could, if you're under 30, you might be interested in a working holiday visa. There's digital nomad visas, study visas, residential long stay visas, a whole bunch of options, which kind of complicates it as well.
Sure. And you can't just zip off to another country in Europe and reset the clock on your tourist visa.
No, not at all.
Right. You'd have to leave Europe totally.
You have to leave Europe totally. And also, if you come up to the 90 days on your Schengen visa, you can't just nip over to the UK for a couple of days, come back, and you've got a fresh 90 days. You've actually only got 90 days out of 180 days.
Right.
So you really do have to be looking at that calculator to make sure that you're not overstaying your visa.
Within the 90 days, you can go to any other Schengen country with the sort of carefree, right?
Absolutely. The whole point of the Schengen visa is that it makes ease of crossing borders it makes it really simple.
Right.
And, you know, if you have been to Europe recently, you'll notice that unless you're at an airport or a port, like getting on a ship, people will rarely ask to see your passport.
I agree with that.
Border.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic. It just makes life so much easier.
Sure. No, that's great. I mean, we would love to have you over there if you can give us 10 minutes every now and again to come up with a story, which I know you will. So it doesn't matter where. I think people down here love to hear about Europe. A lot of us have roots in the UK or other parts of Europe. I've got some a foot in more than one camp over there. Have your background, though, your family's from Ireland, aren't they, originally?
Mostly from Ireland, but I think that, like a lot of Australians, there's a big mix of different countries and cultures in there. I'm mostly Irish, but there's a bit of English, there's a bit of Danish. Just, I guess you'd call me a mongrel.
No, I wouldn't say that. I'm Heinz 57, maybe. No, that's great, Justine. Have you lined up that you'll be able to write for some of your publishers back here?
Look, I'm hoping to, definitely, because I think being there on the ground, it makes a difference, and, you know, I'll be finding lots of stories that you wouldn't necessarily find that if you're there just for a short period of time.
No, I agree, absolutely. And is there any age restriction on this type of visa you're going for?
No. So the visa that we're applying for, and there's a variation of these in lots of different countries, it's really about being able to prove that you can support yourself.
Right.
So, you know, in a way for us, it's kind of a long service leave type arrangement where we are essentially taking a break from our lives here in Australia. And yes, of course, I'm always on the lookout for stories and so on. But it is a bit of a holiday, but a holiday where we really get to slow down and stay in places for longer and really get to know the culture and not be doing a million things, you know, like ticking off boxes all the time, but really getting a sense of the local culture where we're staying.
Yeah.
Some of the other things that you need to consider if you're thinking about a longer stay, say 6 months in Europe, are things like your driver's license and understanding what is required. And I think if you do get a visa attached to a particular country, it's absolutely worth your while to understand before you go what they require in terms of licenses.
No.
And, you know, it really, some of the things that I wanted to raise with you is that when you are going for a longer time, you really need to plan more carefully and take into account approaching the way that you travel slightly differently in terms of money, communications, you know, other issues that are completely different when you're not just going for a holiday.
Sure, you can get away with your $5 a day on the mobile carrier here, but, you know, you won't want to do that for more than a week, would you?
Exactly. So the last time I was in Europe, I was there for 6 weeks and I decided just to go with my carrier's $5 a day. Not that I used it every day because I used mostly Wi-Fi. Because it was convenient and when I added it up, I thought it was actually decent value for money for the convenience. That doesn't work over 6 months. So you really need to consider how you're going to manage that.
Sure.
The phone thing is more difficult now because of two-factor authentication, particularly with banking. So you really need to think about how you're going to manage that. And one of the ways to do that, because it's so much related to banking, is to think about how you're going to manage your money while you're away. And there's now, thank goodness, some really good options for travellers who are going for a longer time.
Right.
For instance,
with Aussie banks or international banks, or how do you do that?
Well, quickly. One of the ways to do it is, for instance, there's an option called WISE, which is money transfer, where you can basically get a card and you can do your exchange rate transfers like once, like in a big lump, and that gets transferred to your card so that every time you're using your credit card, you're not getting that little fee for exchange. You also get some free ATM withdrawals. So it just makes managing your money so much easier. You don't have to take huge amounts of cash with you and you're not looking at your bank statements and seeing all those numbers add up of all the exchange rates and the expensive, you know, little extras that happen every time that you make a purchase.
I suppose you would take some cash because you can then go into a bank and transfer it into the local currency without any, hopefully without any fee.
Yes. I mean, I always take money with me when I go. Not a huge amount, but enough so that, you know, when I land in an airport, if I need to, I can grab a cab, I can buy a coffee, I can feel confident that I can do what I need to do without having to worry about credit cards.
You can't be declared a vagrant because you have no visible means of support.
Exactly. But the good thing about these options, such as, you know, money transfer cards, and Wise is not the only one, there's quite a few, so I'd recommend that people compare them, is that you don't have to take a huge amount of cash with you, because more and more we are a cashless society.
Yeah, we are. We are, and I'm afraid your rebel card won't work over there. You won't even be able to buy a pair of footy boots. Now, I wanted to ask you, what about health cover? Are you covered by Medicare or by your health fund here when you're away for that period?
No. I mean, there might be some countries where there is reciprocal relationships, but coming back to the visa situation, all visas demand that you have full travel health insurance.
Right.
So that's something that you have to do. And one thing I would just point out to people is that if you already have a yearly travel health insurance policy, which some people do because they're traveling all the time, you really should go back to your health insurer and check that you can actually be away for that extended period of time. Because a lot of policies say your multiple trips only include trips up to, you know, 6 weeks or something.
So many days, I get it.
Exactly, yeah.
I've come across that myself. So are you able, if, say, your policy did only allow a certain defined period like that, are you able to get another policy while you're away over there, or what do you think?
I think I would, if you already have a multi-trip policy, an annual policy, I would go back to my insurer and say, look, my situation's changed. Yeah. What do you recommend? I think it would be fairly easy to either break that policy and get a new one or adapt the policy. They want to keep you as a customer.
Sure.
So I think just make sure you do that well in advance. You don't want to do that when you're overseas. It's always better to do it before you leave.
Yeah, and if you suddenly decide you want to ski the tallest slopes in Europe, that's also another thing that may not be factored into existing policies. You know, that'll be regarded as a risk.
Yes, but you can actually update that along the way. So if you contact your travel insurer a couple of days before you're intending to either get on a motorbike, jump on a cruise ship, climb a mountain, jump out of an aeroplane. And they usually can upgrade you to that, obviously for a fee, or they will recommend that you don't do it for various reasons and you might want to readjust your plans.
I won't be asking you to do any of that, Justine. Well, unless it's a cruise ship, you might like that.
A cruise, yes, but jumping out of a plane, absolutely not.
No, I agree. The ground's there for a very good reason.
Yes.
Not to slam into.
One thing I would, if I may, just recommend for people to think about before they go away is, if you are a member of a club here, such as a motoring club or an auto club, it's worth looking into the reciprocal opportunities with clubs overseas, because it's not something that you may not be aware of the opportunities there if you're mostly in Australia.
Sure.
But there are plenty of clubs that are international clubs that you can actually get an opportunity to stay in the most wonderful places, but only if you're a member of that club.
Well, it know that because you worked with the RACV for a while,
editing
their journal.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's one I would absolutely consider. And if that's something you're interested in, you can actually sign up before you go here to take advantage of that reciprocity, because in Europe it means staying in castles, in chateaus, in incredible places that you simply can't get access to if you're not a member of that club.
No,
and
that's
there's
a very
other clubs.
Yep.
You know, if you were going to spend extended time in the UK, perhaps in London, there are other clubs that are worth signing up to as well, just for that duration of your trip, so that you can access some of those really special places that you can't get access to otherwise.
Are you aware of Paradors of Spain?
I'm not aware of Paradors of
Spain. Here's another opportunity for people. There is a group of interesting buildings similar to what you've just described. They are big mansions. They're places where religious orders may no longer require the facility. So you might find you're in a seminary or an old nunnery. I stayed in Ronda in Spain, which is one of the Mesa, and Hemingway was there, and we stayed in the town hall, but it was one of these designated paradors of Spain. I think a lot of them may have been seized by General Franco, and he turned it into virtually a national hotel club. They aren't always in the centre of the city. They might be slightly out, but they're definitely worth a visit. You reckon you'll spend most of your 6 months in France?
I think we'll spend a couple of months, but all the time sort of popping into Italy and neighbouring countries because Beautiful. We've got friends and family there, which, I mean, also brings me to, you know, one other point is that I know a lot of people who want to spend an extended time in Europe are doing it because they've got family and friends there. Perhaps they've got grown-up kids who have made a base there or, you know, relatives, you know, if they were born overseas. But I think if you are going to spend an extended time in Europe, you really need to have a purpose. And by purpose, I mean a particular interest sort of that keeps you focused on why you're there. For some, it might be studying the history, the architecture. It might be about food. It might be about walking, doing some of the great Caminos. But I think if you have a reason for why you're there, it gives you focus to your time and you don't just feel like a tourist. You actually feel like you're there for a reason. For me, it's always been about studying the language and the culture. And I think if you are going to spend extended time in one country, such as France or Italy, it's a great opportunity to do a language course. They're usually only half a day, 5 days a week, but it gives you such an insight into the culture. You immediately meet people. You get opportunities to explore the city with fellow students and your teachers. And then after, you know, by lunchtime, you're completely free and you can go off and do what you want. I would absolutely recommend that. And that's something that I'm considering if we end up being based in France doing, and I can improve my high school French and perhaps turn it into something a little bit more substantial.
Right. And if you don't end up in France, where would you choose to go, Italy or somewhere?
Because of the rule about the 90 days out of 180 days, I think we would probably head to Turkey.
Oh, okay.
Because that's outside of the Schengen area and spend, you know, at least a month there. And I've also really excited to go to Georgia. So I'm planning to head up there. There's a trail called the Trans-Caucasian Trail, which connects Armenia, Azerbaijan and Georgia. It's a very new trail. It's still under development. But some of the walks there are just incredible. And if you had three legs, you could put a leg sort of almost in each country at one point. Okay. And the Trans-Caucasian Trail also is extraordinary because it is that kind of border between East and West, Asia on one side, Western, you know, Europe on the other.
Destined to be a foreign correspondent, Melbourne's Justine Costigan explaining her decision to live in Europe for about 6 months. But before she goes, Justine will be here next week to co-host the show with me one last time. One last time for now, anyway.